This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In for the faceoff. O'Reilly and Little wins it, but it comes loose on the puck. It's fair down the ice by Steve. And the St. Louis Blues hang on and defeat the Winnipeg Jets by a score of 3-2. And they win this best of seven series 4-2. As for the first time in this series, a home team is victorious.
Dennis Bayak with the final call. The Winnipeg Jets, as you well know, defeated by the St. Louis Blues in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're going deep on the Winnipeg Jets all morning long here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you, and we don't do it often, but in the third hour, we're going to open up the phone lines. We want to hear from you starting at 11 a.m. Central. You have your opportunity to get your 2 cents in on the Winnipeg Jets season and what needs to change ahead of the 2019-20 Winnipeg Jets season. Good morning, universe. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning.
It's good to see you, and I'm also loving the fact that you've got a couple of mandarin oranges, and it looks like a little cup of tea. What is that there?
That's coffee. I'm not sure why you don't know the difference between tea and coffee.
Very fancy cup.
It's just a travel mug. It's really not that exciting at all.
Is that a Contigo?
No. It's just a travel mug of coffee. I don't have the Ginsberg wealth where I can just swing into a Tim Hortons all the time and, just willy-nilly throw down dollars upon dollars upon dollars for coffee. So I have
make my coffee now. Oh, I make Tim's at home.
Okay.
And I put it in my Contigo, but I'm just liking your little setup here. You know, I bring the donuts every week.
Yeah.
And you've got your couple of oranges, and I couldn't tell if that was tea or coffee.
Clearly.
It looks like a very fancy little cup. Anyways, it looks like you've got a nice little setup. You're ready to go here.
Dave, can you start talking so he can stop talking?
I've got nothing. I've literally got nothing to say to that, and I've got nothing in front of me. I feel disappointed.
Well, there you go. Anyways.
Dave M. is a minimalist.
That is true.
When he's on the radio, he likes to just focus on the topics at hand.
That is true.
He doesn't need donuts and, fancy coffees and,
accoutrement.
Darjeeling teas or whatever you have in there.
Alrighty, on that note, good morning, everybody. Let's start talking about the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to go player by player throughout the course of the show and talk about which players matched our expectations, which player exceeded our expectations, and which players underachieved over the course of the season. We want to hear from you. You can get in on the conversation via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also send us your text messages. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And as I mentioned in hour number three, we're going to open up the phones to hear from you as well. So let's start by talking about next season. Obviously, this year ended in a disappointment. Last year, the Jets got all the way to the Western Conference Finals, and that was sort of the benchmark. At least the second round was the baseline that people expected for the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously, this year, they didn't get that far. They lost in 6 games in the first round. There was drama surrounding the team, especially in the latter half of the year. We heard issues in the locker room. Who knows how much of that is accurate? Who knows how much of that is overblown? But going forward to next year, you look at the roster, it's still talented. There's going to be some changes, lots of French free agents, lots of RFAs. We're going to talk about that next segment. What are expectations now for next season based on this year and the disappointing end to it, Dave?
Well, I mean, I think that you have to think from the Jets' perspective that things are only going to improve. I mean, look, the reality is that they ran into the hottest team in the NHL. And so, I thought they played relatively well. They obviously blew a couple of leads in the series. But the fact of the matter is that from what we're seeing right now, we can see that any team can get hot. It seems like in this NHL, at least unless this year seems to be a bit of an anomaly. But at the same time, there are high expectations. I don't think the window's closing. There was a lot of windows closing talk in Winnipeg, and I don't think that's the case.
How could the window be closing when it just opened a year ago?
Yeah, well, I mean, look.
Like, what are people talking about?
Yeah, and
maybe it's like a drive-through window. It opens and closes very quickly.
I think what they're talking about is from a cap perspective, the Jets had a lot of more certainty this season, and they had the opportunity to add. And I think from that perspective, they were thinking to themselves, okay, that specific window with this group is open. Now, obviously, it changes year to year, But I still think that the window is pretty open for this Winnipeg Jets team. There's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent that's down in on the farm. There's players who are in college and draft picks who could help this team. Not necessarily next year, but some could in theory. So you've got still a pretty bright window for this Jets team. They obviously underachieved. There are obviously things that happened in the latter half of the season that really kind of submarined their season. But so I would think from the perspective of everybody in Winnipeg, there's still high expectations for this team. Now, perhaps what this does is it removes that idea of, you know, the hockey news cover that the Jets are going to win the Stanley Cup, and everyone kind of anointed the Winnipeg Jets the favorites, not necessarily to win the Stanley Cup, but to at least be a participant in the Final Four and then maybe even in the Stanley Cup Finals. And a lot of pundits were still picking them to be the winner. So I think what this maybe does is remove that pressure, because people will maybe take a step back from anointing Winnipeg as the front runners again to start the season, and allow them to kind of do what they need to do, which is maybe, you know, have a little less pressure.
Maybe fly under the radar a little bit more.
Kind of almost like Washington did last year, because nobody picked Washington to win the Stanley Cup last year. Or maybe if they did, there were very few who did. And even when Washington went into Columbus and lost those first two games.
Columbus actually beat them in Washington.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. I meant that when the series happened that Washington lost, you know, everybody was just off of Washington, and Washington went out and did something, and they weren't, you know, the popular pick in the Stanley Cup. So I think what the Jets need to be is do what they can do, which is, you know, this is a very talented group, but I just think that pressure really got to them this year.
Dave, I don't think the expectations are going to change one bit next year from this year. I mean, the expectations this year were go to the Stanley Cup final, win the Stanley Cup. I mean, when you go to the Western Conference final, I mean, the expectations aren't, you know, get to the second round or get back to the Western Conference final. I mean, this team was built to win the Stanley Cup this year. And yes, it was very disappointing, and they lost in six games to the Blues, and a lot of those games were one goal games, but you're absolutely right. I mean, there was a lot of pressure, you know, when you're anointed, not just by, you know, the hockey news, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, but I mean, when there are a lot of experts predicting that the Jets are going to win the Stanley Cup at the beginning of the year. I mean, the Jets knew this. We talked about it at the beginning of the season. How are the Jets going to manage those expectations? And yes, you know, going back to the way the season finished, and just the regular season as well, this was a 114-point team that was a 99-point team. And obviously, you know, if you have a healthy Dustin Byfuglien, a healthy Josh Morrissey, you know, you don't lose some of those games that they lost in the third period when they were leading, right? You think of the San Jose game, you think of the Minnesota game. Sure. I mean, there was a bunch. I think there were 9 games where they lost after leading after two periods, right?
Yeah, and then that number increased, of course, right, in the playoffs.
So, I mean, they could have easily been a 106, 107, whatever point team, right? But the point is, I mean, this team is still going to be built to go on a long playoff run. And the core of this team, as Dave mentioned, I mean, it's still a very talented core. It's a young core. And, you know, when you're talking about some of the players they might lose, I mean, with all due respect to some of these players, I mean, these aren't guys that are going to tip the scale the other way, right? I mean, you know, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, Brian Little, I mean, you know, Kyle Connor. I mean, the young core of this team, Josh Morrissey, you know, Jacob Trouba obviously is the big question mark, but Connor Hellebuck and Ned. I mean, the Jets are maybe going to lose 3 or 4 players, but those are going to be, you know, third and fourth line forwards. Those are going to be third pairing defensemen, right? I'm talking about Tyler Myers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ben Sherrod is a guy that, you know, I do think that the Jets want to re-sign, but it's going to be tough.
We'll talk about that next segment.
Right. But, you know, Sherrod's contract is going to go up, and he earned it. You know, good for Ben Sherrod. So, you know, a guy like Brandon Tanev, is he going to be back? Well, it all depends if the money fits, right, guys? Because when you're talking about an $83 million salary cap, and, you know, Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine making, you know, around $16 million between the two of them.
And Blake Wheeler making more money this year and everything else.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Wheels is going to be making more money. So not everybody is going to be able to stick around this year. And that means that the Jets are going to have to go to the farm. And that's why players like Mason Appleton, Christian Vesalainen, Tucker Pullman, Dave. I mean, these types of guys are most likely going to be starters next year for the Jets as opposed to the Moose. But, you know, getting back to those expectations, It kind of goes to what I was talking about with the core of this team. I think when you look on paper at all of the talent the Jets have, are there holes? Of course. And we're going to get into that. But
every team has holes on it.
Every team has holes. Look at the 128-point Lightning. I mean, they got swept in the first round. So, I mean, winning the Stanley Cup, and everybody seems to forget this time of year, is really hard. I mean, it's a war of attrition. Only one team ultimately gets to raise the Stanley Cup. And, you know, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff, Paul Maurice, the whole management and coaching staff, they're going to go over this roster and they're going to identify, you know, where they need to get better. But as far as the expectations go, because the Jets got knocked out in the first round, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden, you know, the Jets aren't going to be a Stanley Cup contender next year. And by the way, I'm not saying the Jets are going to win the Stanley Cup next year.
You're saying the pressure doesn't change.
I'm just saying they're going to be a good team. I mean, would any of us be surprised if the Jets won the Central Division? Obviously, it depends what other teams do in the offseason, but I don't think the St. Louis Blues or the Dallas Stars or the Colorado Avalanche are, you know, all of a sudden head and shoulders above the Winnipeg Jets. I think the Jets are going to be competing with these teams for the next 2 or 3 years, you know, for the best team in the Central.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're doing a deep dive into the Winnipeg Jets 2018-19 season that, of course, ended in disappointment with that first-round loss to the St. Louis Blues. There's been a lot of talk this week, a lot of talk really since that defeat last Saturday about the leadership of this team. And there's people that are saying that this team needs a leadership reboot. And we know that Blake Wheeler's the captain, and I would be absolutely stunned if the season began next year and Blake Wheeler wasn't still the captain.
I will guarantee you that he will be the captain next year.
I would agree with you. What about the assistant captains or the associate captains? We know this year it was Scheifele and Byfuglien. Byfuglien didn't speak with the media on the final scrum day earlier this week. Do you think that there's a possibility that the Jets change around the associate captains or maybe do a rotating associate captain in addition that you've seen a lot of teams do? Does the leadership group of this team maybe need an overhaul in some regard, Dave?
Well, I mean, look, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press talked about this. He asked Kevin Cheveldayoff off about it at the exit meetings on Monday, and it was the idea of the changing of the guard and the young, and there were other journalists asking about that changing of the guard and young leadership taking more responsibility within the core group. And, you know, I don't know that you can do that easily. I mean, we saw it obviously in San Jose, but it's not the easiest thing to do is to switch your leadership group. I mean, I could see Dustin Byfuglien probably happily giving up the A because he probably does it, you know, if it means less responsibility in terms of talking to the media, he probably wouldn't be super upset. And look, the reality is to me, and I agree with Mike's assertion, I think Josh Morrissey is a natural fit for that leader. He's well spoken. He's good with the media. He's an integral piece of this team. So it's not like he's not a player who has a tremendous amount of responsibility. So he's one of the core pieces. And he's young. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who can be that bridge to with younger guys like Jack Rozvik, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, and probably has a lot of, I mean, he's 24, but, you know, relatively young on this team. And I think that's a bridge between some of the older guys on the squad. So, you know, I think that may be something that they talk about. I mean, again, I don't see them taking the A off of Mark Scheifele either because he's probably your next captain after Blake Wheeler. But I definitely think Josh Morrissey is someone that, you know, would be a good fit in that role on the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and Dave, Morrissey's already kind of, you know, filling that role, right? I mean, he's already kind of, you know, that leader to the younger players, right? You know, Sammy Niku on defense is a great example, right? He looks up to Josh Morrissey, a guy who, even though he's 24 years old, he's still relatively young, you know, for a top defenseman on the Jets. But yeah, guys, I mean, Blake Wheeler's going to be the captain next year. Mark Scheifele is going to have an A. Maybe Buff isn't an A next year and you give it to Josh Morrissey, or maybe,
if Byfuglien doesn't have the A on his jersey next season, that doesn't change the influence that he still has in dressing
room. That's the whole point. I mean, you know, is there a leadership problem on this team? You know, I think there was a problem on this team. I think the way the Jets finished in the second half of the season, and especially, you know, we talked about it on the Wednesday show with Shawny Assor. I mean, the way the Jets came out in St. Louis for game 6, I mean, that was a team problem. That was not one person. You can't put that on Paul Maurice. You can't put that on Blake Wheeler or Mark Scheifele. The whole team didn't show up for the first two periods. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum now. They had 6 shots on net or 5 shots, whatever it was,
guys. 6 shots after 40
minutes. Yeah, it wasn't a lot of shots, whatever it was. And, you know, the Jets just, they didn't play well enough to win game 6 and force a game 7. So to me, that's a team problem. And I think there's a lot of personnel that factor into a team problem. It's the coaching staff, it's the management, it's the players. Obviously the management lesser so, but it's the coaching staff and the players, the leadership group specifically. So, you know, to pin it on 1 or 2 or 3 players, I think is unfair. Right? So I think when you're talking about, you know, this current leadership group and do the Jets have a leadership problem? I think Blake Wheeler is a great leader. I think Mark Scheifele is a great leader. Buff is a little bit more unorthodox in the way that he leads because he kind of lets his actions do the talking, right? He's a guy that talks in the dressing room, we hear. Obviously, we're not in the dressing room, but you know what I mean, right,
and,
guys?
And he's good with the referees
right,
as well.
Right, and he does it by...
Blake, difference. He's not an outward-facing leader. He's an inward-facing leader.
Right.
The manner in which Buff then leads happens behind closed doors where people don't see it.
Right, and you know, Buff makes the big hit or he scores the big goal and he says, you know, come on, boys, let's go. He lets his
follows his example.
Exactly, and so he's always going to be a leader on this team, whether he has the age, Drew, but I definitely think, though, that, I mean, I look at it, and you could maybe call it a communication problem. You could call it, you know, was everyone on the same page in the second half of the season and going into the playoffs? I mean, it's really hard to pinpoint it, but I don't think that the Jets lost because they don't have good leaders, put it that way.
When we come back, we look at some of the Jets' unrestricted free agents and restricted free agents. Who is gone? Who is coming back? We do a look at the upcoming changes to this Jets roster. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Same answer as always. I'll figure it out once things get going in the summer. What's best and move forward from there. We got to sit down and kind of have a meeting and figure out what to do moving forward. So I haven't really thought about it, or I tried to put it in the back of my mind as much as I could this year and just forget about it, and we'll deal with it when the time comes.
Current Winnipeg Jets defenseman Jacob Trouba addressing his upcoming contract status. Notice how I use the word current there, perhaps foreshadowing what might be an interesting offseason for the Winnipeg Jets.
Did Troops have a late night Sunday night? He was sounding a little rough.
Yeah, well, who knows? Anyways, he does, you know, the standard answer he gave about his future as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about that this segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit Linden Market Dental Center.com. So let's start with Jacob Trouba. We know that the Jets have a litany of pending unrestricted free agents and restricted free agents. Trouba is an arbitration eligible RFA, one season away from UFA status. You know, what percentage would you say is possible? What percentage do you think Jacob Trouba would sign a long-term extension with the Winnipeg Jets this offseason?
Probably say it's less than 50%. And it might be closer to 0%. I mean,
certainly less than 50%.
Well, why didn't Trouba sign a long-term contract this past offseason, right? And I mean, Trouba, and I'm glad you started off with Jacob Trouba because
he's the big one.
Yeah, he's the big one. And, you know, if the Jets aren't going to sign him for whether it's a year or a long-term deal, I mean, that's going to have a ripple effect for this defense. I mean, that's your top pairing right side defenseman, right? And, you know, we know that, you know, Josh Morrissey's going to be back. Dustin Byfuglien's going to be back. But, you know, when you talk about Tyler Myers, guys, and, you know, how does Tucker Pullman fit in and how does Sammy Niku fit in? Because you have Tucker Pullman and Sammy Niku that are literally knocking at the door. And, you know, Dave can attest to this. I mean, Tucker Pullman was excellent when he was healthy because he missed a lot of games, right? Dave, he missed like 30 to 40 games this year.
Yeah, missed a lot.
When you're talking about Niku, I mean, Niku is a guy who plays on the right side. So is Niku going to replace Tyler Myers as your third pair defenseman? Is Dmitry Kulikov going to still be your third pairing left side defenseman? Is he a guy that you could possibly move? But back to Jacob Trouba, I mean, you mentioned that he's arbitration eligible, Drew. You know, obviously he went to arbitration last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that, I mean, Jacob Trouba, he even mentioned it in his answer. I mean, Trouba is obviously a guy that, you know, He wants to explore, I think, unrestricted free agency.
I don't think he wants to make a long-term commitment to living in Winnipeg.
Right.
And that's certainly his prerogative. And if that is what the tea leaves are reading, and it certainly seems that way,
right,
it seems incumbent to me, Dave, on the Jets trading him this offseason as opposed to, you know, letting the season begin with him on the roster, potentially moving him at the trade deadline if you're in the thick of a playoff race,
no, but
or losing him for nothing.
No, I agree with you. And sorry, Dave, I mean, you know, when you talk about that, I mean, that's the whole key. He can't explore UFA, the UFA market until next summer. So if you're going to sign him or he goes to arbitration, you're not going to, why would you sign him so that you're going to have to trade him before the trade deadline? You don't want that type of distraction. So I agree. I mean, that's kind of the question mark. It's either sign, is he going to sign a long-term contract or is he going to be traded? I don't think, I really don't think another one year contract is beneficial to either party, right?
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt Trouba, but I don't think it's beneficial to the Jets.
He probably wants more money though in his first year if he can get it, well, of a long term deal.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think he's fine going to unrestricted free agency either way though. Dave, what are your thoughts on Trouba? You were in the room on Monday during the exit interviews.
Yeah. I would say, you know, it's funny. A lot of people are interpreting his body language, his words. I didn't really think that. I didn't think it was any different than what Jacob Trouba generally says about these sort of things. And you got to remember last year, I mean, it ends in the third round. Generally, the feeling is fairly positive around the group. And now you're disappointed because you end in the first round when there were a lot of expectations and probably. So I don't know. I don't know that I necessarily interpreted his words in any negative manner. A lot of people seem to do that and say that he was noncommittal. But I mean, if you listen to a Jacob Trouba interview for the last, you know.
Sounded similar.
Yeah, it just sounds pretty much par for the course with Jacob Trouba. So I didn't really interpret his words to be anything of significance. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, that was just my reading of him. And I kind of got the impression from everybody. Everybody was down and everybody was fairly morose because it was the first round and they were done by a month early. We had an exit interview with these guys April 22nd. Last year it was May 22nd.
So a month earlier.
It's a month earlier and there's a lot more disappointment.
Two rounds earlier.
That's right. And so there's a lot more disappointment and a lot of, and it was evident. So, you know, there's not a lot of excitement right now because you're out. And now, did he have a good year personally? Of course, he had his best year as a professional. And so there's no question from his perspective, things went well for him on the ice mm-hmm. for the most part, obviously. You know, there were a couple of errors that he got torched on. But for the most part, you know, it was a very solid season for Jacob Trouba. And to Ezzie's point, I mean, people talk about the Jets' depth, and defensively, you know, you've got to be a little concerned if you're going to lose a top pairing right side defenseman like Jacob Trouba. So I just don't think you can be that cavalier about a player of his ability. And again, one play doesn't define a player's stock in my mind. So if you're going to replace Jacob Trouba, I mean, the Jets cannot afford to be let's replace Jacob Trouba with you know, a middling defenseman and a bunch of draft picks. I mean, you need to find a situation that's going to, you know, almost offer Jacob Trouba the setting he wants and a player who's of a similar caliber, which, again, isn't easy to find, you know, that opportunity with the Winnipeg Jets.
I mean, if you're a potential trade partner for the Jets mm-hmm. and you see that Jacob Trouba has 1 year left on his contract before he's unrestricted free agent, you know, you're probably not offering up an absolute ton because you figure, you know, I can get him for just cash 12 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, has Kevin Cheveldayoff maybe, you know, played his hand a little poorly in that, you know, the value of Trouba, even though he's had a great year, he might not be able to recoup as much on the trade market because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, you know, relatively soon. If you're a team, I don't know, let's say, for example, the Florida Panthers,
mm-hmm.
and you want Jacob Trouba and you want him on your team, you're not necessarily going to give up, you know, the farm to acquire him if you can get him as an unrestricted free agent 1 year from now.
Yeah, and you make a good point. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. You know, I think Dave makes a good point when he talks about the career season. Not only did he have a career season offensively, it was a career season by far. I mean, Jacob Trouba was, you know, a defenseman that, you know, Paul Maurice was leaning on even more this year. And, you know, part of that, guys, had to do with the fact that when Buff was out of the lineup, he was on the power play unit.
50 points for Trouba this season, career
high. Right. And so when you're talking about Trouba and he's trying to cash in now on that year, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to believe that Trouba and his agent, Kurt Overhart, they know this, right? And that's why I talk about, you know, I think Trouba and his agent would be more interested in signing that long-term contract with another team if it isn't the Winnipeg Jets. And going back to what you said before, you know, a trade for Trouba would probably be a one-for-one deal unless you have to throw in something else to sweeten the pot. But You have to replace him in the lineup because Dustin Byfuglien obviously is your top, you know, right defenseman after Trouba. But if you're not going to bring back Tyler Myers, I mean, so you've basically got now
Nyku and Pullman.
Right. And those are two rookie defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
right? So
scary.
Well, and they're good. I mean, I really like you guys know. I mean, yeah. For Christ's sakes, I have a UND Tucker Pullman jersey, right? So when you're talking about Pullman's game, I mean, it's ready for the NHL. So,
but it's scary. You can't. I mean, anytime you put two rookie defensemen on your blue line, you're asking for potential to be trouble.
Well, Pullman's 25. I mean, he's not a fresh faced rookie out of junior.
Fair enough. I mean, you're right. He's a man in terms of his body and everything else. And Niku has certainly got talent, but he's certainly young and slight and everything else. Yeah. It's certainly a frightening proposition to go from a right side defense of Bufflin, Trouba, and Myers to a right side defense of Bufflin, Niku, and Pullman. And that's no disrespect to Niku and Pullman.
I don't know if I agree with you. I just think it's a function of, it's more about depth. Because right now you can rely on those guys as your depth pieces, and then it becomes a function of who in this lineup then is now the guys who are behind those guys.
Sure.
And so to me, that's the concern. Because again, Tucker Pullman, Coach Vincent of the Manitoba Moose said he looks like a player who's playing in the wrong league at one point this season. And if you watch Manitoba Moose hockey, I mean, Tucker Pullman was phenomenal for the Manitoba Moose. He was the best defenseman. He got that award from the team. I mean, but the issue is the health. You know, he had a concussion this season.
And also, he can step into a third pairing role, maybe a second pairing role next year as the season progresses, right? But you can't expect him to play a first pairing role for the majority of the season. And that goes back to what you said, Dave. I mean, if Trouba isn't part of next year's plans or your long-term plans, who's going to be brought in? Because the Jets have some good young defensemen in the system. But if you're going to trade Trouba, you would think another defenseman has to come back. Unless, I mean, the big, you know, kind of but or if here is, are the Jets going to sign somebody on the free agency market? But the thing is, there aren't any top pairing UFA defensemen, right-handed defensemen that I'm aware of.
Well, I mean, if you're going to sign somebody in free agency, wouldn't that somebody be Tyler Myers, the guy who, you know, you're already familiar with? I mean, he's probably going to ask for a lot of money. And he's probably going to, you know, get a number
of
years.
Tyler Myers is not a top pairing defenseman.
I know he's not a top pairing defenseman, but I mean, you're not going to be in the market for an Erik Karlsson type of player at this point in time. So,
No, I mean, the Jets are not signing Erik
Karlsson. No, that's the problem. Is I'm saying that, I mean, in an ideal world, the Jets would rather just keep Jacob Trouba, but he's 1 year away from being able to call his own shot. And if he doesn't want to sign here, that's his prerogative as becoming an unrestricted free agent.
I think the big thing will be what happens at the draft. I think the lead up to the draft for the Winnipeg Jets can be very interesting.
Would that be where, because that's the more likely place where...
Well, especially for a team that has three picks, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, I don't think that this... I agree with Ezzy. I mean, this has to be a player that's going to replace Jacob Trouba, which isn't exactly easy to do because most teams aren't in the market of trading a first-pairing defenseman. But again, if Kevin Cheveldayoff and his staff can do it, they're going to have to find an opportunity right there.
There's one defenseman that I really like. The only problem is he's a little bit older. Anton Strahlman is a pending UFA. And without Strahlman, the Lightning really suffered. Obviously, they didn't have Victor Hedman in that first-round series. They didn't have Nikita Kucherov in the third round. But Anton Strahlman is an excellent defensive defenseman. He's 32 years old, though. So if you're bringing in Strahlman, I mean, he's going to be on a, what, 3 or 4 year deal. So I imagine, though, that the Jets are probably exploring more of the kind of 24 to 28-year-old defenseman if they're making a trade for Trouba. But I will say Anton Strahlman is probably, after Erik Karlsson, is probably the number one right-sided UFA defenseman.
When we come back, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun joins us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Shortly past the bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Remember, we're going to open up the phone lines an hour number three. Want to hear from you in the third hour of today's program. Throughout the show, you can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, he covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's our good friend, Scott Billick. Scott, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, guys. Good morning. No problem.
Scott, you know, given the disappointing end to the Jets season, we were talking about this earlier earlier in the program, right off the start of the program, so I'll let you weigh in on it. Given how this season's, you know, ended so disappointingly for the Jets, how does that change expectations in your mind entering next season?
I guess it's probably going to depend on how the summer goes, really. I mean, you know, you're going to want to see who leaves this team, you know, how they kind of maybe rebuild the back end if Jacob Trouba's gone, if Tyler Myers is gone. I can't help but think that you have to kind of temper them a little bit if this team does get younger, though, right? Like, you know, depending on who you lose, whether you lose even a guy like Brandon Tanev up front or whatever. I mean, you know, if you look at this team this year, I mean, if you want to talk about windows, you know, by no means do I think the Jets' window is closed, but I do think it was probably open the most this year, just based on contracts, based on talent on the team, and that sort of thing. So, well, next year's expectations, well, you know, I certainly expect the Jets to be a playoff contender, and probably even a contender in the Central Division for the top spot. You know, it all just depends. It's a really tough question to answer because you just don't know yet. You know, a week later from when the Jets got bounced from the first round, we still don't know what the future of some of these guys looks like. And I think that a lot of it, you know, really does hinge on Jacob Trouba. I mean, if they miraculously can sign him long term, you know, I think that's a big deal for the Jets because, you know, you lose a top pairing defenseman, and if you can keep that, then you don't have to try and replace him with somebody in the system or whatever means that they go out and try and figure that out. You know, that would go a long way, you know, because to solidify that back end is a big thing. That's, you know, where some of the Jets' struggles were this year. And you know, but it's really just going to depend, I think, on the summer and too, if the Jets can, you know, regain that defensive structure that was missing this year. They just didn't have it this year. And, you know, we've all heard the players talk about that now after their baggy day, I guess you want to call it that, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it, you know, are they a Stanley Cup contender this year or next year? It's a tough call right now. I mean, you can see in these playoffs just how much parity there is. You know, I don't know who's a Stanley Cup contender anymore. You know, it seems like the regular season doesn't even matter. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason. I think that'll dictate what expectations are as they come.
You know, Scotty, you mentioned Jacob Trouba and, you know, Brandon Tanev in your answer there, and I think we all know who the big RFAs are. Along with Trouba, you've got Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor who are going to get the big paydays. But when you're talking about the second tier of RFAs and UFAs, and I think you'd agree Tanev would be in that second tier, but you've got Andrew Kopp in there, you've got Ben Sherratt, Tyler Myers, I guess if you want to throw in Kevin Hayes, but I think most people expect Kevin Hayes to test the UFA waters. But in that second tier, who is there one player that stands out to you as being a player that Chevy has to re-sign?
Yeah, I think it's Andrew Kopp, 100%. I mean, if you're looking, are you talking RFAs or UFAs?
Both. Yeah, either RFAs either, or UFAs, yeah.
Yeah, I think to me, Andrew Kopp is the guy. I think Andrew Kopp is so versatile, so smart, you know, just a tremendous player. And a guy who really thinks the game in a way that you would want to. Paul Maurice raves about Andrew Kopp, just the fact that you don't have to tell. It's almost like he's a step ahead of everything. He knows exactly what happens on every play. You know, people talk about Mark Scheifele being that kind of guy and whatever, but Andrew Kopp probably doesn't get the recognition that he probably deserves for the way that he plays the game. And the fact that, who knows, he might even be a second-line center at some point. Depending on what the Jets do in the offseason, you know, they've tried to address that position umpteen times, right? I mean, they've gone out 2 years in a row now and spent a first-round pick on trying to find the guy there, but they haven't really tried Andrew Kopp there, and I think that would be interesting. But, you know, I just think he's the guy, if I look at the list. Like, I mean, of course, Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor are guys those guys are a lock to be signed. Like, they're going to get signed. And you know, Andrew Kopp is going to get signed too as an RFA. I mean, you know, they're going to figure it out. But if you can try and figure out something longer term for him, I think it's great. I mean, if I just looking at the UFAs, I mean, yeah, Kevin Hayes is probably gone. you know, I think if anything, I think Brandon Tanev is the guy that you want to try and figure out how to keep him here. I think if you want to keep that line together as dominant as it's been, TLC is what I'm talking about. If you want to keep that line together, you know, he's the guy that's been there, and he deserves a raise now based on his year. You know, 14 goals, I think it was now, 13 or 14 goals, you know, plays a role, you know, a significant role in the penalty kill. And then just one of those players who plays well with Adam Lowry and Kopp on that line. So, if you're looking just at a UFA's perspective, with the guys that I'm looking at, you know, I don't think that Tyler Myers can be re-signed for at least, or not the price tag that he was getting paid. Ben Chiarot, you know, he's probably disposable at this time. He's going to want to raise. Some of those guys might not. And, you know, Brandon Tanev, you might be able to fit in if the price is right. And I think for him, that's, for our UFAs at least, that's where I would be at. In terms of RFA, I think Andrew Kopp is just, you know, the guy that you want to sort out. I think he has arb rights this year as well. So probably want to not go that route with him. I think he's earned, you know, a bit of a raise, and he's going to get one.
You know, Scott, there's a lot of talk about the Jets' leadership and whether there's problems with it. Do you anticipate a change? And if so, what player do you see stepping into that role and taking on some added responsibility?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I don't know about a change per se. I mean, I think if anything, it's probably Josh Morrissey. But yeah, I think Josh Morrissey is already the guy that was already part of the leadership. You know, you lose him for a couple months down the stretch. Doesn't help the room, of course. Doesn't help, you know, the on-ice play. If anything, I guess Josh Morrissey. I mean, it's hard to say. Like, you know, I agree that there was probably some issues going on. I mean, you don't bring in Matt Hendricks on, you know, one of the last things just because you I don't know. I guess you want a guy in the room sometimes who's just a little, you know, keeps things light. But, you know, that's kind of Dustin Byfuglien's job. And yeah, to Byfuglien's credit, he was kind of injured for most of the second half of the season there. So, maybe Josh Morrissey would be the guy that would step up. I mean, you're going to lose for perhaps a leader in Jacob Trouba. I don't know how that looks in the room in terms of his leadership, but obviously he's played in the league now for a while. But, yeah, I'd probably say Josh Morrissey would be a guy that could step up into that role and really take a, you know, just as level-headed as Josh Morrissey seems to be at times. I think he could really do that.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets season. Of course, it ended last Saturday with that defeat to the St. Louis Blues. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Scott, you wrote about sort of the Jets and their downward spiral for NHL on NBC or, you know, Pro Hockey Talk.
Yeah.
And you talk about sort of, you know, the coaching decisions that Paul Maurice made throughout the certainly throughout the latter part of the season when that spiral downwards occurred. Was Paul Maurice too stubborn with his decision-making, particularly after the new year?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, and that's kind of what I wrote. I mean, I do think he was. I think, you know, part of the issue is, and you start to look at the other teams in NHL and their ability to, you know, break up lines and stuff like that. Colorado Avalanche is one team that was able to do that. They got away for a time from the MacKinnon and the Rantanen and the Landeskog all being together and just to try and find something, right? And so when you look at the Jets, you immediately look at that Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and maybe, you know, kind of diversify yourself and move those guys up and down the lineup to see what you have, because when things start going wrong, instead of just trying to do the same thing over and over again, and we all heard you always talk about the insanity joke and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think there's just at a time where, in season, where maybe things weren't going right, and maybe that's when you take a step back and maybe try and look at that. And, to me, it's just you have to do that when things aren't going well. Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler may want to play together, but for the betterment of the team, it might have been more beneficial for them to to split up and see if they could, you know, make a second line work with Lyon or whatever, you know, like there's different permutations of lines that you could now make and try and optimize them here and there. So, yeah, I think that was part of it. You stuck with those guys too much. You probably played them a little bit too much early on. You didn't really seem to trust anybody else on the PKs, so you had those two on there. I mean, those guys just played a lot of time. And to me, if I'm looking at the Blue series, there was times where Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele just looked kind of gassed. And when Paul Maurice comes out and talks about sustainable gas and not having enough in that, and not even sure going into the series if they were going to have enough of it. I mean, to me, that's just like, I mean, you got to look at how much you're running these guys and give them a little bit more and give some of the younger guys a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. I mean, there's this old, you know, you're hearing about this right now in Toronto, with Toronto being out of the playoffs and Mike Babcock not running his big guns and stuff like that. And you know, I think you have to look at this differently now. You have to rest guys. You have to, you know, play guys in different roles. You have to, it's just not about, you know, trusting everything. You have to really find a way to, you know, optimize your lines throughout the season, especially when things aren't going right. And I just don't think that happened this year. And so you kind of had what you had in the playoffs, and it seemed like people were just kind of, like I said, a little bit out of gas.
Scotty, last question for you here, and we always appreciate you joining us, especially in the 9:30 a.m. slot, because it's the early slot, and you're always good to come on with us. But we haven't talked a lot about the goaltending, and the Jets have two RFA goaltenders, of course, that being Eric Comrie and Lauren Brossoit. I mean, what do you think is more likely, that Lauren Brossoit is signed to another contract, or Chevy says, you know, Eric Comrie was pretty darn good in the American Hockey League this year. It's time for him to have the backup role.
Yeah, I just don't think Eric Comrie has really shown well in the NHL yet. I mean, you know, that's not to say he can't, and he does get thrown in positions that's not. I mean, if you can get Lauren Brossoit at whatever the price may be for a backup goaltender, I mean, they got really lucky. You're paying a backup goalie $650,000 to play as well as he did this year. It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, they've waited a while for Eric Comrie. I don't know where Eric Comrie's at. I mean, I guess that's the honest answer. I'm not sure, because you see how well he does play in the A, and Dave can speak to how well he's played this year for sure. But when he comes up here, it's just not the same. It's not the same Eric Comrie, in my opinion. So I just don't think we've seen enough from him to probably, if you need to have a good backup in this day and age in the NHL. And so, if you don't trust Eric to do that job, then you have to figure out, you know, can we find another guy like a Lauren Brossoit, or can we re-sign a guy like Lauren Brossoit? And I think that's, you know, what it comes down to for the Jets. They have to figure out, you know, whether or not they trust Eric Comrie to play meaningful games in the NHL and do that. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's the short of it is, you know, I just, to me, I haven't seen enough from Eric Comrie to warrant him being the full-time backup next year. And if that's the case, then perhaps he needs to, Kevin Cheveldayoff has to look at a different route at this point.
Scott Bill covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. You can also read his work in the Winnipeg Sun. Scott, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us, buddy.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Scotty. When we come back, we begin our evaluation of each and every member of the Winnipeg Jets. We talk about who matched our expectations, who exceeded our expectations, and who underachieved over the course of the 2018-19 NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Listen, I don't have that. I don't have that answer. Obviously, you know, I'm. If we had that answer, you know, things might look differently. But it's a hard trophy to win. You know what I mean? And even if you figure out what we need, doesn't mean we're going to win it.
Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler talking about the team, the expectations, and what this team needs going forward. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long, weekdays or weekends, visit Bernstein's Deli at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall.
Last day of matzah, boys.
Last day of matzah. Passover ends later on this evening.
Yeah, no Illegal Curve sandwiches for the last week.
Yeah. But you can get them on matzah.
But I plan on eating at least five tomorrow.
Got to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
Perfectly reasonable thing on, in fact, your doctor does recommend that.
Do you put jam on matzah? Do you put margarine on matzah, butter? What do you like? Are you a plain matzah guy, Drew? What do you like?
I don't know anybody who's a plain matzah guy. It tastes like drywall, but, I would go with peanut butter oftentimes.
Peanut butter?
Sure, why not?
Interesting. What about a little marmalade?
I don't really think I have any marmalade in my house on a regular basis.
You
a
Smucker's guy?
You're really full of it this morning. What did you do? Did you take your crazy pills in the morning?
Raspberry. That's a good point. I don't think I did. But when you're talking about jam, I mean, it's got to be Smucker's raspberry, right?
I don't really talk about jam.
What about your peanut butter? Are you a Jif guy?
Dave, make him stop. He's getting onto my last nerve, and it's only 9:40 in the morning, 9:55. Let's talk about the Jets and player expectations now that the season has come to an end. We're going to start with the forward group, and we'll get through as much as we can over the course of the program, and it might carry over into next week as well. Reminder, hour number three, opening up the phone lines, 204-780-1290. Want to hear from you starting at 11 a.m. Central Time. Let's start with the Winnipeg Jets captain. You heard from him off the top there with the clip. Blake Wheeler, 91 points in 82 games for the Winnipeg Jets, another tremendous season, but there's still that feeling of disappointment for over how the season ended. You know, we're not going to give out grades. Did Blake Wheeler exceed expectations this year? Did he meet your expectations, or did he underachieve?
Yeah, I'll start off here, boys. I mean, for me, he met my expectations. I don't think anybody's going to say that, he underperformed. I mean, he tied his career high in points, right? And, he was exactly what you'd expect. He was, that weapon on the first power play unit. I mean, looking for Scheifele, looking for Laine, looking for Connor at the side of the net, Dave. I mean, Wheeler was their most consistent player all year long. Wheeler and Scheifele. So, I mean, for me, the captain met expectations. I mean, was he tremendous in the first round of the playoffs? I mean, I think he was pretty good, especially in games 3 and 4 in St. Louis. I mean, Wheeler, Scheifele, and Connor were excellent. I mean, you think about that, overtime win in game 4 and that big win in game 3. So, I mean, I'm going to say met expectations, and I don't say that in any type of negative way. I mean, the expectations are probably the most high for Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, and we're going to get into some other players, but I mean, after he came off that 91-point season and, all the assists and all that, you expected him to be very close to that, and, obviously he signed the new contract as well, which kicks in next year, but I mean, he's a fantastic player, and I don't think the reason why the Jets, didn't end up winning the Central, even though they only lost out by 1 point, but I don't think the reason why, they didn't finish higher with more points, or the reason why they got bounced in the first round was necessarily because Blake Wheeler wasn't, one of their top players, because he was.
Dave, matched, exceeded, underachieved.
Oh, no, I would say he definitely matched what you expect. I mean, the fact is that he's, about to go into a new contract where he's going to be getting a big raise. And the fact is that, he's the leader of this team, both on and off the ice. And I think he is, like, to Ezzie's point, one of the most consistent players. I think down the stretch, he looked like he was running out of gas a little bit. His time on ice, actually, this year and last year, fairly close, I think, to what they were. But it just seemed like, and I don't know how disproportionate it was, but it just seemed like he just didn't have the gas in the tank towards the end of the season. And I think that's a function of the coaching staff. I think the coach relied probably on him in too many capacities and didn't rely on some other guys enough to really kind of allow his captain to kind of really build up those reserves you need for the playoffs. So to me, Blake Wheeler just didn't seem to have the jump in his step towards the back half of the season. But I mean, he definitely met my expectations because, from what he was able to do while he was on the ice.
Well, if he continued, he's going to get paid more money starting next season. So if he can continue to put up a point a game, be a 19 point player, then that contract won't be a poor contract. But the Jets do need him to continue to perform at this level. Mark Scheifele, he's the second leading scorer on the Winnipeg Jets behind Blake Wheeler. 84 points in 82 games played for the Jets' number one center, Dave. Matched expectations, exceeded expectations, or underachieved over the course of the 2018-19 season?
You know, again, I think Mark Scheifele, similar to Blake Wheeler, I thought, well, first of all, he exceeded it because he had a, you know, a career year in terms of his goals and in terms of his points. And so I think what he was able to do on the ice, but again, he just didn't seem to be the same player towards that second half. So I think he still exceeded them.
Exceeded them?
Well, you know what?
No fence sitting allowed. You got to say either you got to go with exceeded or you got to go with matched.
You know what? No, I think he exceeded because he, you know, in terms of his production, he was productive. But I just think, like, again, towards the end, I just think he just didn't have, he didn't look like, and you know, the one thing we didn't ask Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler towards, in the exit interviews, which I regret doing, not doing, was asking him whether either one was dealing with an injury. Because we didn't really get that answer. And it's unfortunate because now we don't know whether either player had something that they were dealing with. And that's perhaps part of the reason, partly attributable to what we saw. So I still think he exceeded my expectations for what he was able to do on the ice.
I'm going to go with matching expectations. And, you know, when you have a career year in points, it's hard to say that he didn't exceed expectations. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's really the way he played kind of in the second half of the season. There was at one point in the season, I mean, Mark Scheifele was on pace for 50 goals. And sure, he comes very close to scoring 40 goals, but I think his play trailed off a little bit. And does that have to do with the amount of hockey that he's played over the last couple of years? I think that does factor in. It looked like, you know, somewhat of a tired player. And again, I'm the biggest Scheifele fan. I really like Scheifele's game. But for me, that's why I don't give him a plus one. And I think when you look at the playoffs, you have to factor that in as well, guys. I mean, Mark Scheifele, you know, the last two games, we're talking about games 5 and 6. I mean, he just wasn't that big of a factor. And you know, when you're talking about games 2, 3, and 4, I mean, you know, he was arguably the Jets' best player, but I just don't think he had a consistent enough playoffs for me. Of the 6 games, you know, I would say he had, you know, maybe 3, maybe 4 really good games. And, you know, same thing goes for the second half of the season. I think his play trailed off a little bit. It's not that he played poorly. I'm just saying that, you know, in the first, you know, let's say 40 to 50 games, you know, he was much more dangerous, especially when you talk about the goal scoring. So I'm going to say met expectations, but he was still, you know, great this year for the Jets, like we talked about. Career year for him.
When we come back, Marty Biron is going to join us to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, and still to come on the program, we're of course going to continue with our evaluation of the Jets players and the and their expectations for this past season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, as Ginsburg with you in studio. Remember, hour number three, we want to take your call, so get ready for that coming up in about 55 minutes time or thereabouts. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with your latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program TSN hockey analyst Marty Biron. Marty, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. What's going on, you guys?
Not too much. We're doing our bit of our post-mortem on the Winnipeg Jets. But, of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs continue. And last night, they continued in Long Island, in Brooklyn now, to be more exact, where Peter Mrazek of the Carolina Hurricanes was absolutely tremendous, leading his team to a 1-0 overtime shutout victory over the Islanders. Marty, when you look at Peter Mrazek, this is a guy who, you know, left Detroit. You know, expectations weren't overwhelmingly high for him in Carolina, but he's been absolutely unbeatable really for the last, you know, 6 or 8 weeks. When you see Peter Mrazek right now, what are you seeing from a former goaltender's perspective?
Well, I see a guy that can change the rhythm of a game with a save or two, that is very aggressive, very unexpected, where, you know, there's some goalies that you know what they're going to do. They're going to come across, they're going to go butterfly, they're going to have a good glove. Mrazek may come across one time and dive, may come across and be very structured the other time. So he's tough to read, you know, when you're a shooter and when you're trying to shoot. Now, the flip side of that is if you're not perfectly on with your timing and with you know, kind of gauging how aggressive you have to be, the shooters may end up with a lot more room that you want to give them. So, but he's been spot on. It's been, like you said, 6-8 weeks, you know, when in the month of February, you know, if you talked about and you say, okay, who's your number one goaltender for the Carolina Hurricanes? For me, it would have been Curtis McElhinney, because McElhinney was a lot more structured, gave him more consistent playing. But in March and April, the guy that really, you know, made the difference for Carolina to get into playoffs and to win a round against Washington was Peter Mrazek. And I think that's the type of goaltender they needed playing against the Washington Capitals, because I faced the Washington Capitals in the playoffs. And let me tell you, if you just think that your normal play of a goaltender in the regular season will get by Washington, it's not. These guys have a lot of scoring chances. They shoot from a lot of different places. They have a lot of, great sharp shooters. So Mrazek was definitely a big factor in Carolina moving on to the second round.
Now, Marty, continuing with goaltending, is there a more fascinating goaltending matchup to you than Tuukka Rask versus Sergei Bobrovsky? Because you've got two former Vezina Trophy winners there, and obviously, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky, there were all the rumors swirling around him that he was going to be traded before the trade deadline. But when you look at Tuukka Rask specifically, his numbers have been great, almost a .930 save percentage in the first round. You know, you could maybe argue that Freddie Anderson outplayed Tuukka Rask, but when you're talking about Rask and Bobrovsky, I mean, these guys just aren't letting a lot of goals go by them.
Yeah, I think Binnington Bishop for me is a much more interesting goalie matchup, but its close second is Rask Bobrovsky. And say what you got to say. And I think in game four of the first round, Tuukka Rask really opened the door for the Leafs to take a 3-1 game advantage in that first round. The Boston Bruins were up 2-0 in the game. Then they came back, and I remember Austin Matthews' second goal that made it 2-2 was a bad goal on Rask. It went right through him. There was a couple of pucks that snuck right by Rask a few minutes later, but did not go in the net. And at that moment, I thought that was a very crossroad type of situation for Tuukka Rask. Either he's going to completely crumble and give the Leafs this two-game advantage in the series after four games, or he's going to, you know, find his way back. And I think Tuukka Rask found his way back. He was steady. He wasn't overly spectacular. There was some really big saves in Game 7 where I think in that game alone, Freddie Anderson gave up one bad goal, the first one to Nordstrom, and then Tuukka was really good. But now it's going to be interesting because Boston and Columbus are both two teams that can be very physical, that can grind on the forecheck, and it's a different type of game for Tuukka Rask. He's not going to see the rush chances as much as he's seen with Toronto. It's going to be more of a, you know, game that's going to be played in the corner, a game that's going to be played behind the net. And how is he going to be able to react and adjust to going from a speedy rush team in round one to more of a forechecking, grinding type team in round two? So far, I mean, it's looked fine, and it's looked good in the first game. He was good against Columbus, but I think that Columbus and their coaching staff and their players are going to try to exploit some patterns, and we'll see if that turns around. But you know, and Bobrovsky was really good in round one, so I'm not really worried about him. But it's always interesting to see round to round, teams to teams, what the goalie's challenge is. And I think for Tuukka Rask, it's a completely different game in round two.
Now, Marty, going back to the Islanders-Hurricanes series, Robin Leonard played very well, obviously made 31 saves, only gave up the overtime goal yesterday. But he had the Islanders had a 10-day layoff. And as a goaltender, was that a good thing or was that a real difficult thing to put up with after a round of the playoffs?
Well, the thing with a goalie is you almost have to turn your backup goalie cap on, because when you don't play for 10, 12 days, you got to think about it as if you were the backup and the coach tells you, hey, you're playing Friday night and now you have to prepare for that game. When you play every other day, you don't necessarily have to focus on your preparation and practice. Yes, your practices have got to be good, but it's not like you have to build up to a game day situation and say, okay, I've got 5 days of practicing. So, you know, day one, we're going to we're going to do certain drills. Day two, we're going to build up so that by game day five, you're at your peak and you're ready for the game. So I think that's the challenge for a guy like Robin Lehner. And it was the same challenge for a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky, is that throughout the season, you play pretty regularly. Bobrovsky played more, but I'm just saying, like, they play pretty regularly. So you never have to really come down with a plan and say, here's how we're going to get ready for the first game of round two. I thought Lehner, what helps him a lot is he's very, very, he limits his movement a lot. He doesn't over chase the game. He stays in his crease. So the timing is a lot more easier to get than if you're an aggressive goaltender, like a Jonathan Quick type goaltender, and you got to chase the game around. So I think that helped Robin Lehner in the first game, because he's not the guy that moves a lot in his crease. He just stays deep, uses his big body, and that's how he's getting success.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're talking about goaltending in the Stanley Cup playoffs with the TSN hockey analyst. Marty, who does Jordan Binnington remind you of, the way he plays? And do you think he is as good as he's been, really, since getting the call-up from San Antonio?
I think he is as advertised. I think what he's been able to do with the St. Louis Blues is, in Canada, and especially like in the Northeast, in Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, whatever, some people have mentioned Andrew Hammond as a comparable, saying, well, remember when the Hamburglar came in and won all these games and Ottawa made the playoffs, and where is the Hamburglar now? He's playing in the AHL. But I think Binnington is completely different. He's not relying on luck. He's not relying on spectacular saves. He's very structured. He has an extremely, extremely good glove. He keeps it up in the air. It never seems to drop. Shooters are, tempted to say, hey, I'm going to go high glove, but the glove never drops. So that's really good. I don't know who he reminds me of. I think that when you look at Binnington, what he's done this year with St. Louis really got him in the playoffs. I would think that Binnington is probably their MVP, although Ryan O'Reilly, Tarasenko, there's been a lot of guys that have played well, but I think Binnington has been the reason why they've been in the playoff. He's been the reason why they have moved on to the second round. Even if he only had a .908 save percentage against the Jets in the first round, I think that the quality of saves and the timing of those quality of saves really made a difference. So, I think we're going to see a lot of Jordan Binnington over the next few years, and he's done really well.
Marty, last question for you here. Marty Jones and the San Jose Sharks picked up that big game one win over the Colorado Avalanche last night. And, when you're talking about Jones, he was heavily criticized for the way he played in that first round against the Vegas Golden Knights, especially early on games two. You think back to game two, game three, game four, and then, he started to play better as the series progressed. But is this a goaltender to you? And, coming from a former goaltender who has gone on a long playoff run, is this a goaltender that looks like, he's finally starting to feel more comfortable, and it's starting to look like the old Martin Jones?
I would say it's 50-50, because there is times and moments in the game where you think, wow, like, that is a big save. I know he made a rebound save on his right side where he stretched himself the whole length of his 6'4" and got the pad down, and you're thinking, well, this is a Martin Jones that doesn't just rely on his structure, but is willing to improvise a little bit, and there's a little bit more desperation to his game. So those moments, you're thinking, well, he's back. But then you look at the first goal he gave up last night, where it's a harmless shot from the point. He doesn't really look to find the puck. He gives up a bad rebound. He tries to come over for the recovery on the rebound, and he doesn't extend the leg. He just was hoping that the puck was going to hit him. So at that moment, you say, oh, no, this is not going to be a good thing, because Martin Jones can look very much robotic in net. And, structure and using your technique is great. But when you turn into a robot, it's not good, because you're not really reacting to the puck. You're not feeling the game. And so there's been 50-50. There's been situations where I'm like, he's going to be really good in this game. And then, whoop, 2 minutes later, I'm like, oh, no, he's turned back into a robot. So I think it makes San Jose nervous. It makes me nervous. And You know, San Jose is a great team. They should be, you know, one of the cup favorite, but Martin Jones really holds them back a little bit. So it depends which Martin Jones you get. I like to think it's Martin Jones or Dr. Jones. I don't know which one is a good one, but there's definitely two of them.
Marty Biron is a TSN hockey analyst. He's one of our favorites here on the program. Marty, thanks for joining us this morning. We'll let you get on with your Saturday. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, Marty. When we come back, we continue our look at the Winnipeg Jets forward group for this past season. Who has matched our expectation? Who has exceeded our expectations? And who has underachieved? Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're fortunate enough to play with good players and on a good team, and that makes things a lot easier for you. You know, for myself, playing with Adam and Andrew throughout the majority of the year, and Matthew made things a lot easier for me. You know, they're great players, and when you play on a great team, you're going to have success. And I think that's a testament to how good of a team we were this year, and you know, the trust and ability the coaching staff has to put me in situations with certain players.
That's pending unrestricted free agent Brandon Tanev talking about the year he had with the Winnipeg Jets. We continue our look at the Winnipeg Jets forwards. We evaluate the players that exceeded expectations, underachieved their expectations, and matched their expectations. You can get in on the conversation. You can do so via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also send us a text message in studio. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And remember, coming up at the 11 o'clock hour, hour number 3, open phones. We want your take on the Winnipeg Jets season that was and the season going forward. We continue with our look at the forwards. Kyle Connor of the Winnipeg Jets, 34 goals, 32 assists, 66 points. I suspect I know if you guys think he matched, exceeded, or underachieved this past season.
Yeah, I'm going obviously exceeded expectations, and you guys know that, you know, Connor is one of my favorite Jets. It's obviously not about my own personal bias, but, you know, I thought from the preseason, you know, you go all the way back to the preseason, Kyle Connor was one of the best Jets, and, you know, you mentioned the numbers, you know, that's a career year for him, and, you know, I thought he was good in the playoffs. Obviously, you know, the overtime goal stands out. Maybe in, you know, games 5 and 6, guys, you know, maybe you wanted a little bit more out of the Connor Scheifele-Wheeler line. We talked about that before we had Marty Biron on, but, you know, Connor is, to me, just, he continues to take step after step, and I think you're continuing to see a better two-way player. But I mean, Connor's ability to use his speed and energy, get in on the forecheck, and not just that, guys, because that's one of his biggest strengths, but I think this year on the first power play unit, he made himself one of the Jets' biggest weapons, right? Because we knew that Patrick Laine had the big cannon. Mm-hmm. We knew that Mark Scheifele in the middle, you know, had the ability to either one-time it or use that wrist shot. But Kyle Connor coming from the side of the net, you know, we've seen that move where he goes backhand to forehand, mm-hmm. or, you know, he's able just to kind of stuff it. I think this year, specifically, you know, Connor, we saw how really skilled he can be on the power play. We already knew that he's a skilled player. I mean, he's a first round pick. He probably should have gone higher to number 17, higher than number 17. That's a shot to the Boston Bruins a little bit, guys. But no, I mean, Connor for sure exceeded expectations. He was fantastic. And, you know, I can't wait to see, you know, how much better he's going to get, because you forget, you know, he's still in his early 20s.
Yeah, he's going to get wealthier this offseason. That's for sure, as a pending restricted free agent, albeit not with arbitration rights. Dave, I assume exceeded expectations as well.
No, I felt like he met my expectations. I have high expectations for Kyle Connor. Oh. I thought he did what I expected him to do. He played with almost 2.5 more minutes of ice time per game than he did last season. So I like what Kyle Connor does. But one thing Kyle Connor needs to work on, I think, is his defensive game. I think he sometimes has some lapses in the defensive end of the ice. And I think that's a area that we saw collectively this Jets group needs to improve on. I think Kyle Connor specifically needs to improve on his defensive game a little bit. So I thought he had an excellent season, but I expected him to have an excellent season. So from my perspective, he met it.
Patrick Laine had 30 goals for the Winnipeg Jets. He had 20 assists. He had 50 points. His lowest goal scoring total since he entered into the NHL. His lowest point total since he entered into the NHL. Patrick Laine matched, exceeded, or underachieved this season, Ezra?
Yeah, it's got to be underachieved for me, guys. And, you know, it's not just, you know, his goal scoring droughts. It's not the fact that Laine had 18 goals in the month of November. It's the fact that there were large chunks of the season where Patrick Laine was just too inconsistent. And goal scoring is a huge part of that, you know, but when you're talking about, you know, Laine coming off of that second year, you know, when he put up 44 goals and, you know, he was in my opinion, the most dangerous player in the entire league on the power play. And that includes Steven Stamkos and Alex Ovechkin. For me, there were just too many parts of this year where Laine was not effective for the Jets. And that's in all aspects of the game. And, you know, we saw Laine on the first line. We saw Laine on the second line. We saw him on all lines. At one point, he was on the fourth line. And, you know, I think that is really telling for Laine's game, that Paul Maurice really had trouble all year, really finding a line that fit for him. Obviously, you know, playing with Brian Little, Dave, on the second line, that's where Laine was the most effective. But, you know, you saw him have some success with Scheifele and Wheeler on the top line. But, you know, for me, you know, scoring 30 goals, I mean, you just expected Laine to have at least 40 or 45 goals this year. And, you know, on the power play, he was still really effective. What did he have? 15 power play goals. So, I mean, he had a good year. I just don't think he had a great year. And Laine is a great player.
I would say he didn't meet my expectations for sure. I mean, unless we're just going based on November. And then, of course, he far exceeded expectations. But no, I mean, look, the reality is that if Jets fans can see Patrick Laine play the way he did in the playoffs, I'll be very happy, and he'll exceed expectations. And really, it's not just about goal scoring. Because like as he said, I mean, you expect him to get 30, 40, 50 goals and, you know, perhaps hit the 60 mark one day in his career. And the fact of the matter is, look, this is a kid who just turned 21, which he had to be reminded of by Nikolaj Ehlers in the exit meetings. He
said not
he was,
20.
He goes, he was 20, and Nikolaj Ehlers very quietly goes 21. But he's a 21-year-old kid. He's got a lot of growing to do. I think, you know, folks have a tendency to see what he's able to put up offensively and just think purely that that's what you're getting. But, you know, you have to have a rounded game, and that's what a lot of fans are focused on with Patrick Laine, that he needs that well-rounded game. I think we saw it in the playoffs, and I think if you see that next season, I don't care what the goal totals are, if you see that kind of game out of Patrick Laine, I think folks are going to be very happy.
I agree with you, Dave, but he is a goal scorer.
Right.
And so even though his game has to be more well-rounded,
yep.
I mean, when he's not scoring goals, I mean, he has to be doing something else that impacts the game, right?
That's
so I agree with you, but I mean, when you talk about pure goal scorers, mm-hmm. I mean, he's as much of a pure goal scorer as anybody else in the league.
No question. Brian Little is the next Jets forward up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290, talking about which Jets players matched our expectations, exceeded our expectations, or underachieved this season. Brian Little, for the second straight year, played all 82 games.
Yep.
He had his career, not quite his career low in points. That came back in 2009, 2010. But for yet another season, for the third season in a row, his point totals diminished down to 41 points in those 82 games played. Brian Little matched, exceeded, or underachieved.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, what did he have, 43 points the previous year? So,
yeah.
I mean, Brian Little's always around 40 to 45 points. I mean, you didn't expect Brian Little to have 60 points this year. I mean, he's really settled in to that 40 to 45 point range, right? So I'm not that concerned about that. I mean, for me, he met expectations. I mean, Brian Little is that veteran center that, you know, can win some faceoffs. He can go out there on the second power play unit. He can play on the PK, even though I think his PK ice time was a little bit down this year, but I mean, he's a very versatile player that can also play wing. When the Jets acquired Kevin Hayes, he moved to the wing, and I think he actually did a pretty darn good job playing with Adam Lowry on that third line. So, I mean, you know, maybe you expected a little bit more production in the playoffs. He only had one goal in six games, but, you know, for me at this point, you have to start talking about Brian Little more as a third line center than a second line center, because, you know, no offense to him, but he's not getting younger. And sure, he can play that second line role, but obviously Chevy acquired Kevin Hayes to be the second line center, not the fourth line center. But it turns out that he could depend more on Little in the playoffs than Kevin Hayes, right? So those questions are going to arise, I think, you know, this year and the year after, about whether or not Brian Little still is a second line center. But the reality is, guys, when he goes out there and he plays that second line role, he does a good job of it. He's not the best second line center in the entire league, but he's pretty dependable. He can produce offense. And, you know, you mentioned again, his numbers aren't down, but, you know, 15 goals this year. He had 16 goals last year. You know, if a few bounces go his way, maybe he's closer to 20 goals. So for me, you know, Little is the model of consistency. So for me, you know, met my expectations for sure.
Yeah, and I agree with this. I mean, he was playing roughly about a minute less than he did last year. Had a couple, you know, two less points, really. That's fairly marginal. And I think he's dependable. I mean, again, you know, as he says, he's getting a little bit up there in age. But the fact of the matter is that he's still a really reliable defensive forward. And I think that's one thing he's, especially with a younger team, we sometimes tend to forget, is that younger players have a tendency, not necessarily, not all, obviously. There's some guys who are very good defensively, but some don't necessarily have that same commitment. And when you have a center like Brian Little, he's sometimes forced to be a little bit more cognizant of that with the guys who are on the ice with him. So I think He met my expectations for this season.
From one bunch of jerks in the studio to the bunch of jerks in Carolina, the Hurricanes are up 1-0 on the Islanders in the second round. They defeated the Washington Capitals in the first round. Corey Lavalette covers the team for the North State Journal. He joins us next on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more Jets talk to come as well on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.